This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the apprehension of two South Sudanese dissidents in Kenya has rights groups worried they will be deported and face possible detention and torture in Juba.
That's Jill Craig reporting from Nairobi. Details coming up.
Also, Al-Shabaab militants attack a hotel in Mogadishu and kill at least 28. And police say there was one successful and two attempted suicide bomber attacks in Nigeria's northeastern city of Maiduguri.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, at least 28 people are dead and more than 50 injured after Al-Shabaab militants set off a car bomb and attacked a hotel in Somalia's capital today. Authorities say they expect the death toll to rise. The attack happened at the Daha Hotel in Mogadishu. It's located near the Somali Parliament and State House. Al-Shabaab group claimed responsibility on its website. About 40 minutes after the attack began with a massive truck bomb, there was a second explosion. Witnesses told VOA the car that brought the militants to the site had blown up, possibly by remote control. Witnesses say militants kicked open hotel room doors and posed as rescue workers. AP reports two well-known clan elders are among the dead. The head of the National Union of Somali Journalists says at least seven journalists were among those injured in the second explosion.
Police say there was one successful and two attempted suicide bomb attacks in Nigeria's northeastern city of Maiduguri. The Associated Press quotes police as saying a teenage girl blew herself up today after self-defense fighters stopped her near a mosque in the Borno state capital. The bomber and one of the fighters were killed. Another suicide bomber, also a teenage girl, was shot and killed by soldiers. Late yesterday, police say a military sniper killed a male bomber as he approached a checkpoint. Boko Haram militants are believed responsible. The group has frequently used teenage girls to attack targets. Maiduguri is the birthplace of Boko Haram. Since 2009, the insurgency has killed more than 20,000 people and displaced millions of others. Also, yesterday, Boko Haram extremists killed three people and kidnapped seven women in a village in Borno State.
The apprehension of two South Sudanese dissidents in Kenya has rights groups worried they will be deported and face possible detention and torture in Juba. Jill Craig has more from Nairobi.
Kenyan police have detained two outspoken critics of South Sudan's government, according to their attorney and rights groups. South Sudanese lawyer Dong Samuel is a human rights advocate and member of the Human Rights and Justice Committee for South Sudan's opposition. Agrey Idri chairs the opposition's Humanitarian Affairs Committee. Samuel was last seen late Monday, Idri early Tuesday. Their attorney, Eddie Orinda, believes the men are being held at Nairobi Police Headquarters, but says he does not know much more than that.
No one is saying if they are being charged with anything. No one is giving any reason over a possible deportation order that we have heard about. And so we are in the dark.
Human Rights Watch South Sudan researcher Jonathan Pedno says the situation is concerning.
So we have legitimate concerns that this deportation, first of all, would be unlawful, but that those two individuals may also be mistreated upon their return to South Sudan.
Samuel is a registered refugee in Kenya, so HRW and Amnesty International argue that deporting him from Kenya would violate international law. Amnesty told VOA in written comments that given the serious risk of torture both would face in South Sudan, their deportation would also violate Kenya's obligations under the UN Convention Against Torture. South Sudan Information Minister Michael McQuay denied knowledge of the detentions.
have not heard about them being arrested. I know that they are in Nairobi.
Requests for a response from Kenyan police and the Interior Minister went unanswered. If Samwell and Idri are deported, it would not be the first time Kenya has sent back South Sudanese dissidents. In November, opposition spokesperson James Gaudet was returned to Juba, despite his refugee status. He has subsequently been held without charge at the National Security Service headquarters. Pedno says since an outbreak of violence in Juba in July, there has been an increase in crackdowns on dissidents.
I think it's quite clear that the South Sudanese authorities, the South Sudan government right now, are trying to solidify and fortify their position by cracking down on the opposition and the independent media.
Orinda says he wants the Kenyan government to issue a statement specifying whether it had a role in the disappearance and possible deportation of these two individuals. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
After more than a month of anxiety over the political standoff between the winner of the December election, Adama Barrow, and the loser, Yahya Jammeh, life is slowly coming back to normal in the Gambia. Gambians are still awaiting the return of President Barrow from Senegal. He went there several weeks ago when the political crisis began. Reporter Modu Juf has more on the story from Banjul.
As the political crisis that nearly plunged the Gambia into violent conflict came to an end, the mood on the streets is one of optimism after the country's feared ruler for 22 years, Yahya Jammeh, was pressured into stepping down on January 20 by ECOWAS forces.
I'm really, really relieved because there's now peace of mind, there's now change, there's now even the atmosphere in the air, you can even feel the peace in the air. There's joy in our hearts all over the Gambia. My hopes are high. With this new government, I believe there will be new jobs, opportunity, there will be new businesses, investors will come.
I hope that things will change for good, a new Gambia, a Gambia that will have democracy, a Gambia that we will have time limits, a Gambia that people will voice out their concern and you will have somebody who will listen to you.
While businesses reopen on Monday and the wheels of economic activity begin to move, small-scale business owners are still struggling to hit the ground running. Sales have been very low and traffic slow, according to this vegetable seller and taxi driver in Serekunda. I am selling vegetables, he said, but I can't see a single customer who would buy. A lot of people flee during the recent political crisis, and those who remain in the country bought enough food for their household. Now they have to exhaust that before we start seeing our customers again. This is a problem that is really affecting my business. The business has been slowed down by the recent events in the country, this taxi driver said. It is a little better this week as people resume work, but the public transportation system is yet to reach its pre-crisis level. Though some business owners lament low sales record, a few others have found a new way to make money by selling printed materials like t-shirts and cups bearing the image of President Adama Barrow and the civil society campaign slogan, Gambia has decided. This man at Westfield has temporarily closed his mobile phone business to make more money selling t-shirts and cups.
I'm selling cups. Our new president picture is there. And t-shirt, they print there, Gambia have decided. Right now, I sell more than even 5,000 t-shirts since Yahya Jammeh go. Now we are free. That time, if you stand here, next minute, you are at jail and they are torturing you. I'm making money. I cannot even believe it. Even where I'm buying these things, they are saying the same thing.
For VOA, this is Modu Juf reporting from Banjul, The Gambia.
Typhoid cases in Zimbabwe's capital Harare have led the city council to ban vending of food in the central business district, but many vendors are ignoring the ban. Kudzai Svinavashi speaks to the city council and vendors association to get an insight on the matter.
A typhoid outbreak has resulted in renewed running battles between Harare municipality and vendors who have been accused as being a root cause of the disease. Vendors were given a 48-hour ultimatum to leave the central business district, but it has since expired, prompting the council to remove vendors from the streets. Michael Chideme is acting corporate communications manager at City Council.
We are removing the vendors from the streets. The operation is ongoing right now.
Executive Director for Vendors Initiative for Social and Economic Transformation, Samuel Wazai, says the recent move by the council is not welcome.
We are strongly against the move that was taken by the Harare City Council to ban the selling of fruits and vegetables in the Central Business District because of claims that the vending is contributing to the outbreak of typhoid. We find this to be a very strange move in the sense that we see no link between typhoid and vending.
The Secretary for Zimbabwe Association Doctors for Human Rights, Dr. Evans Masitara, explains typhoid.
Okay, typhoid is caused by a bacteria called Salmonella typhi. Its main route of transmission is via the fecal-oral route. Basically, in layman's language, is drinking or eating contaminated food or water.
The acting corporate communications manager says vending is not the main cause, but is contributing to the spread of typhoid.
We don't have really the main cause, but maybe indicators which are pointing to areas where we need to do interventions so that maybe we can contain the spread of typhoid. These are to do with food vending, improving of our water delivery, and maybe attending to best sewers and garbage collection.
Wazai and Masitara agree that the poor city's public service delivery is mostly responsible. Dr. Masitara explains.
From our perspective, the vendors are not the main drivers of typhoid. The main drivers are water issues, sanitation, refuse collection, and sewage repairs. The major cause of this outbreak is service provision, or rather lack of proper service provision. If you look around the high density areas, you find that refuse goes for weeks without being collected. Erratic water supply coupled by these sewer systems which are bursting and taking time to repair.
Chidembe has dismissed the allegations that the city council's poor service is the main cause of typhoid.
No. Those are just allegations. We are attending to those are our normal duties, normal routines. We are doing that every day. Yes, people always raise issues, and we appreciate the concerns of the public, but we are doing what we can do under the present circumstances.
Zimbabwe's poor economy has made it hard for citizens to pay their bills. As such, the council is owed a great deal of money. Chideme explains.
Yes, sure. They owe us in excess of 550 million, money which should be going towards service delivery. If that money were to be paid today, we would do a lot in terms of our service delivery.
Since the outbreak in December last year, City Council says about 125 cases have been confirmed, while at least two have died. Masitara says the statistics are underreported as some go to private hospitals and doctors. As the blame game continues, typhoid cases keep spreading. Dr. Masitara says there are multiple reports of cases outside Harare, which is alarming. The council says it is working around the clock to put an end to typhoid. This is Kudzai Zunawashe, reporting for Voice of America from Harare.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 19 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Al-Shabaab militants attack a hotel in Mogadishu and kill at least 28. And police say there was one successful and two attempted suicide bomber attacks in Nigeria's northern city of Maiduguri. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
You Uganda and surrounding countries are on high alert following an outbreak of avian influenza, commonly known as bird flu. The disease has so far claimed a number of wild and domestic birds in Uganda. Some neighboring countries have banned importation of Ugandan poultry products to prevent the spread of the disease to their countries. Catherine Nambi has details from Kampala.
It has been over a week now since an outbreak of bird flu was reported on the shores of Lake Victoria in Uganda. The highly pathogenic avian influenza, blamed on exotic birds from Europe, has resulted into mass deaths of both domestic and wild birds at Lutembe Bay, with Uganda Wildlife Authority putting the figures at over 900 birds dead so far in the three central Uganda districts surrounding Lake Victoria. Vincent Bamulangachi Sempija is Uganda's Minister for Agriculture and Animal Industry.
Uganda Wildlife Authority estimates 950 white-winged black-tan migratory birds to have died at that point of Lutembe so far. Kalangala and Masaka districts have reported the death in both wild and domestic birds, and teams have been dispatched to assess the situation and establish the actual data.
Following the outbreak, Uganda's neighbors, Kenya and Rwanda, banned imports of birds and poultry products from Uganda as a protection measure. However, Minister Sempija says sample tests have revealed that bird flu has not been found in commercial poultry. Thus, the ban on Uganda poultry products should not stand.
No cases have been reported anywhere in Uganda from commercial poultry units. The points where the avian influenza was reported are under quarantine and strictly monitored by teams, police, and everybody there, and nothing moves out of that area, whether day or night. And this is just a small landing site. Therefore, there is nothing that can reach the markets anywhere.
Although the disease affects both birds and humans, Uganda's health ministry says no cases have been reported among humans, but samples have been taken from people who have presented signs and symptoms of the disease in the affected areas. Vivian Nakalika is the spokesperson, Uganda's Ministry of Health.
Some 20 cases have been suspected to have contracted the deadly avian influenza in the areas of Lutembe Bay and Busi Islands. We want to emphasize that these cases have not been confirmed, but people in question were seen with symptoms of flu and fever common with the avian influenza. So our teams have taken samples for further examination and analysis, but there is no human case that has been confirmed in any of the affected districts.
Dr. Noelin Nantima, an assistant commissioner for animal disease control, says although this is the first time the disease has broken out in Uganda, the country has been on alert with a team well prepared to handle the disease in case of any outbreak.
We have been waiting for this disaster since 2005. So we've developed materials, we've been training people, we have written the response plans. You remember when there was that scare? So we've been really preparing for it. And we wanted to stop it there so that it doesn't affect our population.
As precaution, Ugandans have been warned against sharing shelter with animals and birds, which is a common practice in the affected districts. Dr. Kenneth Mugabe is the team leader of epidemiologists collecting samples from affected birds.
So here we have just come to do additional investigations and to talk to people, to advise them to take precautions so that they don't get infected as well. But the confirmation is already with us. We are advising them to get special shelters for the birds so that they don't mix with the birds like it's happening here.
The World Health Organization has called on all countries to closely monitor outbreaks of the deadly and highly pathogenic avian influenza in birds and poultry, and to promptly report any human cases that could signal the start of a flu pandemic. The government of Uganda estimates that the country might need about 6 months to contain the outbreak at a cost of about $3.5 million, approximately 12 billion Uganda shillings. Reporting for VOA, I am Catherine Nambi in Kampala, Uganda.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Kwame Afori, and our engineer, Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. This Sunday, tune in for an awesome hour of African music, music news, and culture. Democracy and Music. This week, I bring 10 of your favorite African artists to the mic to give, and in some cases, to sing you their views on the topic.
Oh, yes.
Don't miss it this Sunday, 1500 and 2000 UTC, right here on Music Time in Africa.
And I will feel all right.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African Music Mix on the Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best.
Yes, sir. Two Face, NATO C. Hey.
Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kHz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kHz, 19.2 meter band. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butter here to remind you that February is Black History Month here in the United States. And starting February 1st, we will begin our Black History Month series and daily quiz. Listen every morning as we profile historical African-American and African individuals and events. You can win a special Daybreak Africa calendar and other VOA goodies by answering one of our daily Black History questions. Please send your answers to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. You can also call us on 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. We will select a winner each morning from among the correct answers.
The
the lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandy.